I just invited myself. Okay, good.
I made you my
The Higher Education and Workforce Development Budget Division will now be in order. Today's date is Thursday, April 9th, and we do have a quorum. And today's a special day. It's our Committee Legislative Assistance birthday. Happy birthday, Sean.
Happy birthday.
He loves when we do that. Okay. We're beginning with a bill from Senator Herr. Welcome, Senator Herr.
I want to put in a record, happy birthday, Sean.
Smart, Senator.
And thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I believe this is the first time my bill come to the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee.
So, well, thank you for being with us today.
So this bill, Senate File 893, many of our nursing faculty observed that about 80% of the nursing students failing their class are immigrants and refugees from other countries. This bill, Senate File 893, set up a program called the Kathleen McCollum-Zander Success in Nursing Program to help foreign-born students and students from underrepresented community to succeed in their post-secondary nursing studies. This program not only contributes to the student progress in training, but by large prepares students for our future diverse workforce. The Section A on this bill explained the objective of the program, and the Section B covered the detail where grants will be distributed. With me here to testify is Mr. Zander, whose late wife was named for the program. He can tell you very extensively the background, the effectiveness of the program. There are also other testifiers too, but we'll introduce them as we go. And I have an amendment for this bill, Amendment A1.
Senator Sharon would be happy to move the A1 for you, Senator.
Thank you very much. And this is a delete all amendment. It actually just mainly everything are very similar except naming the dollars on the top. And, have a little bit in-depth breakdowns of where the money will go. So I can entertain some question or we can
Well, first we'll vote on the motion. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Very good.
Thank you. So I could stand for question or we could have Mr. Zander, give us up to date, tell us a little bit background of how this this program got started and the effectiveness of it. Reed? Okay. All right. Let's start with Reed Wester from MCTC.
Chair Bonoff, members of the committee, my name is Reed Webster, and I'm the Dean of External Relations and Workforce at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, as well as the Executive Director of the MCTC Foundation. We thank this committee for the support you have provided to MinSCU and MCTC, which enables us to offer leading-edge academic programs in nursing and in many other fields that lead to high-paying careers. The nursing program at MCTC is one of our largest and most prominent, with over 600 students. MCTC and its nursing program have a very diverse student population, with 55% students of color, 80 languages spoken on campus, and with a significant numbers of foreign-born students from all over the world. Our nursing program's employment placement rate exceeds 90%, with wages of $28 per hour, which is over $58,000 per year. We have a learner-centered model in nursing, which integrates classroom, lab, clinical, and collaborative learning. Additionally, we have recently entered into an innovative agreement with Augsburg College, which allows a student to seamlessly receive an Associate of Science and Bachelor of Science in Nursing in just 3 years. This degree track is the first fast-track Bachelor of Science in Nursing program in Minnesota that is a collaboration between a two-year public and a four-year private college. Language barriers and cultural differences have been identified in the literature as barriers to foreign-born student success in nursing. Through one of our outstanding nursing faculty, Kathleen McAuliffe-Zander, MCTC was poised to launch the Success in Nursing program to assist foreign-born students in nursing this past fall. The program assists students in learning effective study methods, engaging in active learning methods, and learning strategies to reduce test anxiety. Through this program, students would meet once a week to receive coaching and mentoring in these areas throughout the semester. SF 893 would allow MCTC to begin this initiative started by Kathleen, and MCTC is honored to be able to testify in support of these efforts. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Pam Pearson. I'm a nursing faculty from Century College, and I'm here to talk about the program that we did have going there. It was called Courage to Succeed. CTS is what we actually abbreviated it to be called that. And it was born in really 2007, the fall of that year, for foreign-born students. It came from several years of research as another faculty and myself went through our master's program. And what we did was we took foreign-born students and we allowed them to choose if a program would be something they'd be interested in. So they volunteered for the program. In 2007, we started it with first contacting as many students as we could who we assumed were foreign-born students, which was not the best way of being able to do it, but we sent out a letter ahead of time. We then made phone calls to this group of students, and it was about 38% of our student numbers that year. And so then we followed it with an orientation that lasted about 5 hours before the school year began. It was a very intensive 5 hours, but it was mostly based on trying to do it around fun and getting to know students and helping them to understand that it was okay to have a relationship with faculty. So much of what we did was mirrored in what Reed just said. We ended up meeting with the students weekly and really developed relationships with them, and so that was a big part of what we did. On a weekly basis, we talked about what they were learning in the class that week and tried to just reinforce that by using critical thinking questions, which is so important in nursing, and doing fun things. We got together and we met their families. We had potlucks and really surrounded it around developing that relationship. It wasn't a very costly affair. It was approximately $5,000, I believe, for the semester, so about $10,000 for the year. And the monies went mostly for faculty and then some of our activities that we did with them. It was very successful. We had the funding for 2 years, and the students went from 50% attrition to an 89% pass rate with that group of students. And so we were really excited about it. Unfortunately, the grant money ended, and we haven't been able to model that exact same thing since. So this funding would be extremely helpful to be able to start that again.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, David Zander, I was with the Council on Asian Pacific from 1996 to 2010. Kathy and I were married in, I think, 1999. We both came, our paths crossed in many ways. Kathy at that time was a nurse at HCMC, and I was on a committee. We actually met across the road, Southeast Asian Ministry, and we were forming a center for cross-cultural health. So that was coming together, working on issues. And then we showed up again, Center for Victims of Torture. We were helping there. And then Kathy did become a nurse at CVT and started to have a lot of patients from Africa, torture survivors. So I'm glad to say I'm not an emotional wreck today. I didn't know, you know, how I would be here, but it is very joyful to have this opportunity to carry Kathy's work forward. So my purpose in talking to you for a minute is to just to put a little background on the three words on the bill, Kathy McAuliffe-Zander, so that when this bill you know, it's going to have a huge impact and become put Minnesota in the front on what I see as the Clawson-Huntley, the healthcare workforce development. We are really going to have something here, a pilot program to increase diversity in nursing. So, Kathy, McCullough, that's the Cuchulainn, the warrior of Ireland. And he goes into a battle fury. And Kathy, she had quite a feisty personality. She would be kicking Minshew butt here if she was here, saying, look, these programs work, put some dollars behind it. She was born south side of Chicago, and her father moved the family up when she was a teenager to Coon Rapids. So she did high school in Coon Rapids and then went to Anoka Ramsey Community College, did her AARN there. And many of her friends are still, you know, the graduates of Anoka. As I mentioned, I think she worked at Mercy Hospital, she worked at the U of M, and then HCMC, and was in recovery. I'm thrilled to see her students here today who aren't clinical. Kathy was like a mother duck. She was taking students on clinical in the very areas that she had been as a nurse. And mother duck, come on, keep up, and let's get this work done. She went to Augsburg, one of the first of the students in a new program, transcultural health. And I thought Senator Sharon would be interested. We both met Madeline Leiniger, who's for me is, you know, the Margaret Mead of nursing anthropology and the Sunset Model, and that was great. Kathy was currently in the St. Kate's program, a DNP, and she developed this program that you have that was going to get her doctorate next summer.
It will be awarded. I'm very, very excited at that.
Grief comes and goes, as you know. I'm doing okay. Kathy was feisty and loved her foreign students. The foreign students loved her. She, about 3 years ago, ovarian cancer surfaced. She fought that, surgery, chemo, was in recovery. Last June, while she was writing all this curriculum at St. Kate's, getting it approved, something was showing up in her tests again, CA-125, and when she went to Mercy for did a biopsy, lung cancer was discovered in her lung, separate from ovarian cancer, which is quite bizarre. I thought, well, Kathy's reading down and seeing stage four, and I thought from the doctor, Kathy would still be here. She'd be here till maybe, you know, the fall next year. Kathy died 6 weeks later. And so the sad news is this flyer had gone out. All the students at MCTC received it. They were all recruited. It was all set to go. August 15th, the room number. It was going to run once a week for 16 weeks, carrying all these topics. And some of you have this curriculum. So to wrap up here, Kathy was so devoted to her foreign-born students. And if she'd run this course, we would have another set of data. What would have been the success rate for students here? Just helping them, tweaking them, getting test anxiety down, helping them understand what it means to think like a nurse, how to be assertive on the ward where you have four possibilities. She was absolutely incredible. And so I'm really thrilled that we have so much interest now. I didn't know what to do. The curriculum was sitting on the shelves gathering dust. There was a change of directors of nurses. Nothing was happening. I mentioned this to Representative Karen Clark, and she said we will do a bill. And that's how we started. And since then, everybody has come in letters of support. Maine, the Minnesota Alliance of Nursing Educators are behind this. The Minneapolis Association of Colleges of Nurses are behind this. The Minnesota Nursing Association. All these people have sent you wonderful letters of support. Christy is here. Cohort from St. Kate's. In Christy's letter, much data, and also that wonderful phrase, learning to think like a nurse. So I think it's a no-brainer that we fund this, and I look for wonderful things to happen, that we bring help these wonderful young students. Becky is here.
I'm right here, Dave.
And with her students. We're lucky they're on clinicals today, but they were able to come over here. So this is the future generation. This is the answer to some of the problems in the Clawson-Huntley bill. Thank you.
Mr. Zander, thank you so much for being with us today, and we deeply are very sorry for your loss, and it is really a blessing that you are here to present her legacy. So thank you very much for your courage in stepping forward to make the presentation. And could, before we hear from you, I wondered if the students or the in clinicals could just stand up.
Stand up, guys.
Wow, look at all. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for. Just want you to just each say your name quickly, if you would. Just. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your work and for being with us today. Senator Hurt.
Madam Chair, you know, as you can look at the student here, they're quite diverse, and they are our workforce today, and we're working toward future workforce. I know Mr. Zander for a very, very long time. I'm pretty sure close to 20 years. I see him a lot in the community, but I didn't have the chance to see Kathleen. And I'm sure because she was busy working on her interest in nursing, too,
yes.
Getting her program going. And, nursing is a noble profession. It's hard work. It's hard work. And sometimes we overlook their contribution to society. And if they provide quality service, then, we'll have better health. And if they provide even better service and, provide quality service, then we can heal faster. And so I'm quite honored to carry this bill under Kathleen McCollum-Zander's. And so with that,
thank you very much.
To my next testimony.
Do you want to now? Sure. Senator Sharon has a question, but do you want to hear the last testifier and then ask?
Sorry. Excuse me.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
My name is Rebecca Swadner, and I'm a nursing faculty member at Minneapolis Community and Technical College. This is my group of graduating seniors. They will be graduating next month and getting ready to go out and take their NCLEX examinations, pass boards, and be able to go out and practice. As you can see, and as the senator said, my group is very diverse. I have students literally from all over the world. This group has done marvelously getting to this point. They're getting ready to finish up. But I cannot even begin to count the number of students I have had in my office in tears because they were not able to continue on in the program. The majority of those students, the biggest issue that they told me they had was the language and the cultural differences and trying to learn how to adapt to our educational systems, to work with the language. As Christy said, thinking like a nurse, it's like learning a whole new language. And we know how hard it is to learn a language as an adult. But we have students who are trying to adapt to a new home, trying to adapt to a new lifestyle, trying to adapt to a new educational system, trying to go into a profession that requires a lot of learning. And they struggle. And I have had so many students who I know would be a wonderful nurse if they could get through the coursework. Clinically, they were fantastic, but they could not succeed in the coursework. And I think the program that Kathy was working on, Kathy was a dear friend of mine. We were very close. She was so excited about this program because she saw even more than I did, you know, the struggles that students were going through. And her hope was to help them be able to be successful. And I think and I believe that this program that she had in the works here would be successful. My students that are here today, we've talked about it. Some of them knew Kathy, some of them did not. But they have told me that they have wished that there was a program like this in place for them to make things a little bit easier. They've struggled all this way through, and they're getting there. They're almost done. But anything that we can do to help relieve a little bit of that stress and that anxiety and that struggle so they can focus more on the coursework and be able to be successful would be a wonderful thing. And I truly hope that we're able to get this program in place because we have our future classes coming in. We're going to see the same issues over and over and over if we aren't able to address them. And so I hope that with your help, we will be able to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I have a few questions, if
go
I
ahead,
may.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say to Mr. Zander, I could listen to you say Kathy all day long. The way you say that name is really, it's like a poetry. It's a melody. So, and that's my first name, too. So I love listening to how you said that. That's a little off the subject. But I wanted to ask Ms. Excuse me, let me check the names here. Ms. Pearson, have you completed your master's degree?
Yes.
So we should have articulated that here on our list. That's a real achievement. Congratulations. That's, for this committee, that's no small task. I know. So you mentioned that this was a grant, that this process occurred at approximately $10,000 grant.
Yes.
And that that went away. Where, what was the source of that grant money?
You know, I left my papers in my car, so I might have been lost. Do you have that, David?
Was it the academic excellence?
Yes. Academic excellence is what it was.
I mean, was it funded through a state grant, or was it a private donation, or how did it get funded? I guess the underlying question I have is why is this not covered through the traditional MNSCU system? It's a valued program. It has a positive outcome. You have better outcomes. Why is it not in the budget that we send money to the system? Why is this not appropriated through the typical system?
Basically, the
go
money,
ahead. Thank you.
The monies went away. It, you know, as everything is tightened up and they're laying off faculty, and they don't have budgets to improve our laboratories and all of those things, the money just is dried up. Really, our school was the only one that had done it up to that point within MNSCU that I'm aware of, and I was so excited to see that Kathleen McCullough Zander was going to go forward with it. But really, it was just the monies hasn't been there.
And Ms. Pearson, MNSCU folks are here today. Has there been conversation with them about this particular bill? Do you know?
I don't know, honestly.
Senator Hurd?
I don't know that there has been certain recently.
I haven't heard anything from MNSCU.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. And I certainly understand everything you're talking about, and I value this program. This is the third meeting today that I've been in where we have Appropriations Department of Corrections, Department of Health and Human Services, where there have been additional requests that are outside of what it is that we've already funded. So that's why I'm asking that. And that's the only reason. I'm stunned that this would not be appropriated within the MNSCU budget as it is. So I'm going to want to follow up on that. Okay. The other is and that's really my only question about it. I think it's really not a policy discussion. It is a question of why is the funding being asked and appropriated separately from the MNSCU budget. Others may disagree with me about that. Then the last thing I'd like to say is to the nursing students who are here. I don't know if you know, I'm a former faculty at Minnesota State School of Nursing. And I got to tell you, I got a kick out of hearing these faculty members talk about learning how to think like a nurse, I'm telling you. I don't know how many times I've said that, but for this committee, what that means, it drives the students crazy, especially students, I think, are first learning the language first and then another whole language and a whole construct of thinking that has, in the way I try to describe it is that it's really you move each problem-solving process through a research process. It is a research-oriented thought process that makes sure that you're not intervening inappropriately without doing thorough analysis of the factors. So it was fun to hear that. Nice to see you here today.
And Senator Scheer and I, as we were hearing this, I was thinking to myself, I was glad that you were in committee today because of the expertise you bring in this area. And I actually agreed with you on the MNSCU and had sent a note to council saying, couldn't this be part of a pilot within MNSCU and have a reporting requirement and understand the outcome? So we're on the same page. Thank you. Somebody else had this. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I've been looking through this brochure that you distributed, and Mr. Zander, I'm assuming this was Kathy's work in creating this. So I wanted to call attention to something that's particularly relevant to our work, and on the right-hand panel, there's a quote from the author's name is Jay Gardner, and the article would have been Understanding Factors Influencing Foreign-Born Student Success in Nursing School from the Journal of Cultural Diversity. And the quote is, the retention and graduation of foreign-born nursing students is essential in the development of a diverse nursing workforce. And given that our focus on retention and graduation is very tight, I just wanted to make that point because I think there's a part of this that is obviously it just sort of makes sense and it seems like the right thing to do. It's also apparently the very smart thing to do.
Thank you very much, Senator Kent. Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, I agree with exactly what you just said, and I also think it's the obvious thing to do. These students are a responsibility for these colleges, and they should take some responsibility in helping with the mentoring and tutoring. And I'm grateful that the folks at the end of the table have taken the initiative to do what I think is part of the responsibility of our MNSCU system to begin with. So congratulations to you all for leading the way, and hopefully this will now be a program implemented throughout for all of the students. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you. Madam Chair and Senator Herr and Mr. Zander for bringing this great piece of legislation. I was not familiar with this program until right now today, Success in the Nursing Program. But let me tell you why it has so piqued my interest beyond all the things that my colleagues have said here. In addition to that, a couple things. We know that there's a great shortage of nurses. And in fact, I represent an area that has a huge shortage of nurses. I think the last statistic I read was 2,000 job openings for nurses. So it's essential that we have trained nurses to fulfill the many and the growing needs that we have with the aging of America, 10,000 new baby boomers every day turning 65 each and every day for the next 19 years. This need is only going to continue to grow. And it is essential that we really reach out and have the foreign-born students trained in this very area of growing need and also to really close any of those type of gaps that we're so concerned about and then also to be able to best work with people from all different cultures. So I think this is a great program, and I actually share the hope that this is something that is obviously successful that would actually grow, because I think the need is great, much greater than what actually the appropriation being asked for in this bill. So,
yep, I concur. Senator Sharon.
Yeah, just one more. I think we are all in concurrence with. I'm hoping that the reason, you don't even have to answer this, that the reason that this isn't in the MNSCU budget is because it didn't come to their attention. I'm just hoping that that's the answer to the questions that I'm going to ask about this, because we're talking about $50,000 for a program that is going to reduce the dropout rate for foreign-born students. And to just echo again what Senator Nelson is saying, in an environment where we're trying to bring diversity to the healthcare industry, So it's just very alarming to me that we would not be able to find $50,000 in the Minsky budget for this, because we can't afford to have students who, I can tell you, to get into the nursing program in the first place is not an easy deal. So we're talking about people who have made enormously high sacrifices, taken very complex courses, have achieved it at the highest level among their peers, and then they compete for slots, and they get in, and we wouldn't support a $50,000 expenditure to keep them there. It's just beyond my comprehension.
So if somebody from Minsky who's here could come and just let us know their thoughts on this bill and perhaps what the missing link is. So, Mr. Grathwell.
Does anybody want to come up?
Down the back row. Oh. Hide.
And I see Melissa's coming also.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Grathwell, State Legislative Director with Minsky. This is a program that's been at Minneapolis Community Technical College. We are aware of this request. This competes with our legislative agenda is the $142 million request. We're happy to work with the program and the Senator and the House and Senate author on this request. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anything Ms. Fanning wanted to add? No. Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Ortman.
Hey, just to follow up for Minsky. Is there any reason why you couldn't include this $50,000 amount in your $148 million request?
It's $100,000.
Mr. Grathwell.
Senator Fortman, the $142 million $142 million appropriation request funds inflation, salaries, and it funds kind of the whole budget for the system. This is a program at a campus.
Well,
so I understand that it looks like a small amount in a $1.9 million enterprise. It's a program. It's a campus program. And we make those choices and fund those choices at the campus level.
And Madam Chair, that's not what the bill says, though. The bill says that half will be used at MCTC, but the other half will be used.
A quarter would be at MCTC, a quarter would be at Century College, and then the other half would be in the outstate area.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members, I'd be happy to get back to you with more information on the bill.
Thank you.
I would appreciate that.
Thank you. Senator Sharon.
I said would be my last question, and I lied. So, but I just wanted to follow up with Senator Ortman, and I do think that we do make a general appropriation, and we have, unlike the University of Minnesota, we do have the opportunities to give gentle guidance when we talk about that appropriation. So I think that you can tell Senator
Hur,
really like what we're hearing here, and we're going to try to do what we can to, at least my voice and several voices here, like what we're hearing.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, forgive me for speaking again, but this is the kind of thing where you shouldn't need special legislation to fund a program like this at a state-funded Minsky system college. And I hope Minsky is listening loud and clear. They shouldn't need to come with a special bill. It should be included.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Then we should move on. Go ahead.
And in the context of that request in the four different campuses, I would like to make a friendly request or suggestion of Senator Hur, and I'd be happy to help do this, that we include some sort of follow-back
Senator Kent,
feedback loop,
I had asked
like
Mr.
That.
Fuller to do that,
okay.
So that we would have language. Ms. Senator Hur, if you wouldn't mind, we would add language to the bill that said we want a report back. We want to know how many students, what was the graduation rate, what was the composition of the class, where did they get jobs, etc.
And if I may, because if it is as successful as it sounds like it would be,
then we expand.
Then
it.
We should grow this, yes, and consider doing so even beyond nursing potentially.
Madam Chair and Senator Kent, I'm open to that add-on amendment. Yeah.
Thank you.
last, Senator Nelson.
Just the last piece, which is really to look at this perhaps as a pilot, and this really should be expanded if the results are there. I can think of RCTC has a large population of foreign-born students and just happens to sit in the city where there's 2,000 nursing openings. So I believe that this has great opportunity, and I'm sure Minskew is well aware now of this program.
Very good. Points well taken. The committee's reached consensus, so thank you very much. Okay, next we have is, bill will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. So I appreciate my committee member, Madam Chairs. You know, this is, again, this, and Senator Nelson, thank you for offering that promising opportunity that there's job out there, you know, ready for the new batch of folks, or, you know, these nurses too. And, you know, this is my first time in your committee, Senator Bonoff, and it really gave me a bright star on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So come back again. Okay. Very good. All right. So as you heard, the bill will be laid over. Okay, next we've got Senator Dames here. Very good.
He's hoping for the same reception.
I said it was laid over.
Well, what do I need to say?
The test. So for those in the audience who don't follow that language, we are putting our omnibus bill together next Tuesday. It'll be rolled out, and so this bill will be in consideration to be in that bill. So stay tuned, and you'll be able to read the complete bill Tuesday. Thank you. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Today I'm here to introduce Senate File Number 1716. I do have authors a delete all amendment, and I'll have an oral amendment to that. Bill Number 1716 is a bill that deals with online course creation for the Farm Business Management Program. Also allocates some money to the Minnesota Education Agricultural Education Leadership Council for increased student awareness of some of the programs, and creates an agricultural educator advisories program. It also has money in the appropriations request for the agricultural educators for the activities that they do to advance agricultural education with their students, but that are not compensated by the agricultural educators' employees. Also, then, we have some money that we're requesting for the Minnesota State Calvi Minskew creation of an agricultural program at the SMSU and also at the University of Minnesota Crookston campus. And then there's some requests for appropriations for the Farm Business Management Tuition Program and the Farm Business Management Supplement Program to support Farm Business Management. If we could have the author's amendment.
Yep, Senator Miller has offered the A-15.
And Madam President, Madam Chair, there is a oral amendment on line 122 of the author's amendment. It refers to section 3.
And this is the 425, excuse me. So Senator Miller's offering the 425, and then you want to incorporate. Keep going.
And so that would change section 3 to section 2. That would be the oral amendment. On line 122, page 1, it says in section 3, and that section 3 has been removed and now moved up to section 2. It's referring to the online course education.
Got it.
So that should be section 2 instead of section 3.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, so Senator Miller moves the 425 and incorporates the oral amendment, changing the 3 to a 2 on line 1.22. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just go through the bill here briefly, and then I do have three testifiers today on different parts of the bill. The first section talks about appropriation for online course creation, and that would be online courses created by the Farm Business Management Program at the Minskew Colleges and Universities. The second one is the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, and there's a request for appropriation there to be used by the council to increase student awareness of the courses that are created in Section 2 but also for other courses available to agricultural students. And this would also create a regional agricultural educators advisory program. Section 4 is the appropriation for the agricultural educators grants, and that is a program that would be used by the current ag teachers that we have to be compensated for their basically their summertime activities that they do within the school districts that they're not compensated for. Section 5 deals with the creating of the agricultural education programs within the Southwest Minnesota State University and Crookston campus of the University of Minnesota. Currently in Minnesota, we have a real shortage of agricultural educators. We have typically in the neighborhood of 25-plus programs that go without an educator every year, and so this is trying to develop these programs in order to increase the number of agricultural educators we would have available within the state to fill some of these programs. Section 6 is the Farm Business Management Scholarships. These would be scholarships for mostly for young farmers, but it could be farmers of any age that are getting scholarships in order to be enrolled into the school or to the Farm Business Management Program. And then Section 7 is an appropriation to help supplement the Farm Business Management Program. Over the past several years, we have seen a real decrease in the number of instructors in the Farm Business Management Program. And as we all are getting aware of, agriculture has taken a real downturn at this point, starting to have some issues with the crop prices and things like that. So we do feel that we're going to be seeing a lot more need for the agricultural farm business management programs in the Minsky system. And with that, of course, a lot of different folks rely on that farm business management program, so we want to make sure that we keep that viable. And at this point, I'll turn it over to our testifiers. I have three testifiers here today. Keith Olander, who is the Dean of Agriculture, the Director of the Center of Excellence at Central Lakes College. Dr. Connie Gorris, the President of Southwest Minnesota State University. And Carrie Schwab, the Community Program Assistant at the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Keith.
Senator Dames, before you do that, I just have a couple technical questions.
Yes.
Because we hadn't reviewed the amendment before now, and there are parts of this amendment where funds are being directed to Minsky and the University of Minnesota, which would be in the jurisdiction of this committee.
Yep.
But then there are parts in the bill where the money is being directed to jurisdictions outside of our jurisdiction. So, for example, goes to ag, goes some. So is it your intention that this bill would then travel to other places after this? I'm concerned about the timing.
Absolutely. Let's see. Section A is appropriated to Minsky. Can you show me which sections are? Okay, Section 4 would be going to the Ag Council. Okay.
I'll let Ms. Weidman.
Here's the Commissioner of Agriculture.
And Ms. Weidman's kind of doing this on the fly, so I thank her for doing that.
Madam Chair, members, basically what the amendment does is, in the original bill, Section 2 was in the original bill, which has $100,000 each year going to Minsky for online course creation.
Yep.
Section 3 and 4 are going to the Department of Ag. Those are not in our jurisdiction. And then Section 5 was in the original bill, and that has $500,000 in each year going to both Minsky, specifically Southwest Minnesota State University, and the University of Minnesota, the Crookston campus. And then Sections 6 and 7 are brand new. They are not; they were not in the original bill.
And they are for ag, correct?
And it's ag.
Commissioner Bag.
Mr. Fuller.
Yes.
Grants to
the board. Section 6 does appropriate the money to the Commissioner of Ag, and then in 7 it goes to the Commissioner of Ag for grants to Minsky.
Madam Chair, I believe Section 3 and 4 were also included in the original bill.
That's correct, but those go to the Commissioner of Ag.
So then this bill would travel where next?
Senator Tomasoni's committee.
I would like to see the bill kept intact if possible.
I believe that that would be difficult to fund it without taking pieces and sending them.
So, Madam Chair, what would you suggest? How would we break this up?
Mr. Fuller.
Well, Madam Chair, members, usually what we do is we would retain informally, you know, as a document, what's in our jurisdiction.
And then pass
Section
the whole
7
bill
is sort of difficult. I think you have to make a decision whether it goes to MNSKU or to Ag. You can't. It's not ordinary to appropriate money to one agency and then grant it to another agency. I can see why it was done because there's some conditions, but those conditions can be put on MNSKU directly. So that's what you would do. You would. I don't think we should hear the Ag stuff,
right,
and we should focus on the MNSKU provisions and then retain them, you know, as an idea and send the bill to finance.
So Senator Dames,
yes.
So what we would do is we'll hear the sections of the bill that pertain to our jurisdiction, and then those sections will be considered in the omnibus bill. We can just lay those sections in, you know, we've got a copy of that, and we'd move the bill to finance, so then you would have a chance to present your bill to the other committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question on section, so the parts that would be eliminated here would be which?
We would like to know about the sections that section 2, 5, and perhaps 7. Senator Sharon?
And then, Senator, I think that what I'm looking at, and I want you to look at it with me, in Section 7, what I'm thinking is in our best interest here is instead of the appropriation going to the Commissioner of Agriculture, it should go to the MNSKU. But then we have to change the language because we can't send it to MNSKU and then to the board, so to the MNSKU, and then somehow fix that language up on how you want it distributed from there. Then that would clearly fit in our jurisdiction here.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I would be open to an oral amendment to do that.
And Senator Dames, I think we could just proceed with that understanding.
Thank you.
So 2, 5, and 7. And Senator Dames, you know, I know from having sat in your chair, it's never comfortable when you're presenting a bill, and then in the middle of that it gets unwound, and you have to respond to that. And so we would have told you ahead of time if we had had the whole delete all, but we're fine with working on it this way.
Could I ask one other question, Madam Chair?
Sure.
On Section 6, could that be just reverted to go to MNSKU because that's part of the Farm Business Management Program? And MNSKU at the end will receive that money anyhow to make those scholarships.
Senator Dames, that's up to you.
I would appreciate that, Madam.
Okay, just know we're getting very late in terms of bills, and the budget is what it is, so you might want to spread around your opportunity, but I hear you.
We'll spread the opportunity.
Okay.
That's right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Olander.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Olander.
I appreciate the opportunity. My name is Keith Olander, Dean of Agricultural Studies at Central Lakes College and Director of AgCentric, the Center of Excellence in Agriculture in Minnesota. As you know, we're one of two agriculture centers of excellence in Minnesota, the other one being at South Central College in Mankato. A little background on the FBM portion, just so you kind of glimpse of the program. It's roughly about 57 instructors. That's down about half from approximately 10 years ago. As Senator Dames alluded to, the economy, if we look at that perspective, we're looking at last year we had about a $90 loss per acre on corn, just to give you a specific on that, and we anticipate things like that to happen again this year. More specifically, that's going to spread into the livestock sector. If you followed the article in the Star Tribune last week, you found that livestock in 2014 did very well. Crops did not. And as we move forward into 2015, we find that all sectors of agriculture are going to suffer, at least at this point, from what we can see. And so from that standpoint, you look at farm business management, really that key that works with 3,000 farms across the state in that education piece, in the record keeping, but as well as that benchmarking, and ideally then over to that cash flow piece. Furthermore, that database that gets generated from that then comes to the Center for Farm Financial Management put together, and we see about 30 to 35,000 queries come off that database each year. And a query will come from, obviously, can be individual farmers, individual bankers, but it's all leading to how we build the agriculture economy here in Minnesota. So a very critical piece as we look to that. Even as we came through the last farm bill federally, a lot of the data that is in that database helps utilize some of the pieces in terms of setting the benchmarks for that. One specific example I'll give is that just recently in the organic industry for their crop insurance pieces, they used our database pieces to set the platforms for that. So it kind of gives you some background and perspective. However, saying that, within the centers of excellence now, new to the scene, so to speak, in Minsky, in agriculture, our job is to facilitate the professional development and that database and coordinate across the state for farm business management. And so as we look to our situation here where we're at in declining instructors, certainly I don't think I have to talk a lot about Minsky and the dollars, but just how tight things are. Beyond that, within farm business management, it is not a typical classroom arrangement where I might have 30 to 40 students in one place. It's typically one-on-one situation, and that is because it is personal financial information. So if I'm going to pull 20 to 30 farmers together, it's not likely I'm going to get a lot of personal information how to put a balance sheet together. However, super critical to the program. And we have done multiple surveys as to how do we alter that delivery, and it comes back to we still need a one-on-one component. Even though, as we look to the online courses, there's possibilities of morphing some of that in with more technology beyond that. So if we look to Section 2 in Senate File 1716, specific to the online piece, there's a couple of opportunities here. Number one, basic components to balance sheet, cash flow, even analysis setup and basic record keeping as we look at current technologies. Online education certainly fits in those arenas and would not necessarily replace all of the education pieces in that one-on-one, but certainly could augment the instructor's ability to work with more farmers more efficiently. And so certainly there's opportunity. We've looked at opportunities to how we can do that. Obviously, the funding would help move that or grease the skids, if you will, to move that forward. It's our one of our challenges we have within the system is that all of our instructors currently really are full from that standpoint. So it's not a position where I can hire an instructor because they're on a part-time basis and do extra work. And so this really would help increase that capacity, if you will. Furthermore, then, if I move through the bill, I'll just address Section 6 quickly. Because that's the one that I'm going to allude to, and we can determine where those funds actually end up. Obviously, they're going to come back to Minsky. One specific example I will give there. Tuition runs right around $1,800 for a farm to be enrolled in this program under a normal setting. So let's take that to a 50-cow herd, if we will. So we look at a small family farm setup, and you start taking that $1,800 and applying it over at 100 cow, that's $100, I'm sorry. It's $100 a piece or on that. But if we go down less than that, the price per cow, in other words, per unit, if we look at a unit of production, it goes up so dramatically. It is not feasible for those smaller farms to do that. The other side of that would be for specialty crops. We have specialty crops farm. So they might be farming just 2 to 4 acres, but looking to build into a business model, want to learn that, but have to look at that tuition piece. And when I break that backwards on a per unit basis, if I want to take a specific vegetable, if I want, or just over an acreage basis, that cost becomes prohibitive. And that's where we see these scholarships really is a critical piece to that. And would write those criteria in, so we'd be servicing those that would be not a strength in our database, and we'd really look to that small family farm as a key component to our economy here in Minnesota. And finally, Section 7, as we look to the appropriation piece for that, I already alluded to earlier how the number of instructors have decreased. And obviously with the delivery model, even if we were to alter it some, we're still going to be costly in that setting if you compare to a 30-person classroom, if you will. So we always look at cost per unit, as you know, just like you folks do for everything. And this is not something that we want to run away from. And I liken this a little bit, if I can, without stepping on toes, to preventative medicine. Farm business management, when they're out working with the farmers, are helping them, guide them through strong, solid business principles so we avoid things like mediation or bankruptcy. And on the other side of that, we have a situation where we have a pulse on the farm economy and where some of the indicators are leading us. And we already know we're going to have losses. We're indicating losses in dairy and in crops this year. And so we're starting to look at how do we mitigate that from a planning perspective with the bankers, as well as any coordination of programs with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And we've had those conversations. And I think of that just from the human standpoint, those of us that certainly take advantage of preventative medicine certainly want to do the same thing. And so I liken those two together in doing that. So what I'm doing is advocating that we maintain the strength of that model because we are looked to around the nation. There is no other database that exists like this database that we generate, nor is this program as strong in any other state as it is in Minnesota. So it's really a golden nugget, and it's got well over 50 years of history. But to do that, if we look at that in the system perspective, and certainly we want to respect each of the president's decisions because they're looking at how do we manage a budget. And when we look at a costly program, unfortunately, sometimes it takes the hits, irregardless of what the outcome may be. And we all know that we value agriculture, and we certainly take a part in that at least three times a day, right, as we consume that food. And so it's vital to our economy, and this is one of those key indices as we move forward at Farm Business Management, be a part of that to keep that economy strong. And more so as we look forward to 2015, and you saw the article last week, and you know the statistics that right now that we're seeing this downturn in the commodity prices, and so management overall, be it from the goal perspective or just those key factors on the financial side, are very, very important. So with that, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Chair Bonhoff, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Dr. Connie Gores. I'm president at Southwest Minnesota State University. And I would like to, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon in support of Senate File 1716, specifically Section 5, the section that is requesting an appropriation to assist in the development of a teacher preparation program in ag education. I was named president of Southwest Minnesota State University on February 26, 2013, and within an hour of the Minsky trustees formalizing my appointment, I had the pleasure of coming to the Capitol to meet with Senators Dames and Weber. I remember very distinctly the challenge that Senator Dames laid in front of me. He said, "We need an ag education program at SMSU." And as I always do when I listen to senators, I am proud to say that as I sit here today, I'd like to tell you that we are meeting this challenge, and we are well on our way to establishing an ag education program at SMSU to expand the opportunities for students across the state. As of this spring semester, SMSU is offering a new Bachelor of Science program in agricultural education. Our program will fully prepare students to teach key skills in agricultural technology, leadership, economics, and communications for K-12 school systems. Our BS in Ag Education also will meet the real needs for qualified professionals in adult education and the agricultural industry. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in Ag Ed, there are almost three times as many job openings in Minnesota annually as there are currently new graduates. Three times as many job openings annually as there are graduates. Our program will address that concern. Our physical presence in Southwest Minnesota will help us attract students from rural backgrounds who do not want necessarily to move to a major metropolitan campus and join a campus of 30,000 undergraduates. Being located in the heart of production agriculture will also allow us to build on our unique industry and producer partnerships to create a greater awareness for the program and the distinctive learning opportunities for our students. Students will have the benefit of access to our strong programs and faculty in the food and environmental science-related programs as well. This program has been discussed, lobbied for, and supported not only by our academic faculty, but also by community and business leaders, ag educators, and legislative officials who recognize the positive impact that this program will have on our region, on our state, the state of Minnesota, and beyond. This project has several partners to ensure its success. Southwest Minnesota State has taken an active role in securing financial support to meet a portion of our startup costs associated with a new program. To date, the Minnesota Ag Education Leadership Council, MELSI, has funded the initial hiring of a program director to recruit and market our program, and we have also secured some private donors who have made significant contributions towards some of our startup costs. Our SMSU Ag Education Program is unique in that it places a strong emphasis on partnerships with other MinSCU institutions. These institutions will partner with us by offering articulated applied courses as part of our SMSU's major requirements. These institutions will have clear pathways then for transfers to SMSU for degree completion, and their students will have access to introductory ag ed courses, allowing transfer to other agricultural education programs. Additional agreements will be put into place to facilitate distance learning where feasible. Discussions have been held with Ridgewater College, Minnesota West Community and Technical College, Riverland Community College, and South Central College, and future discussions are planned with Central Lakes College. SMSU has also formally agreed to become part of the Southern Minnesota Center for Agriculture in partnership with South Central College and Minnesota West Community and Technical College. Our goal for this Ag Ed program is for it to grow to a sustainable level that produces approximately, or at the very least, I should say, 15 graduates per year from the Ag Ed teacher licensure specialization. My university, SMSU, currently boasts nearly a 99% placement rate for all of our graduates across all disciplines. And we are confident, and that rate actually has held firm for a number of years. And we are confident that by partnering with our agriculture and education programs, we will continue that success with graduates from this new program. Success will also be measured by the number of transfer students that we attract from within the MinSCU system. If this program reaches approximate enrollment levels, tuition revenue and state appropriation should make the program financially sustainable. Promotion and recruitment will be the most crucial elements of successfully launching the Ag Education Program at SMSU. Recruitment efforts are centering on Minnesota high schools and two-year colleges within the MinSCU system. Extensive outreach is being focused toward current ag instructors and their professional organizations, FFA and post-secondary ag student programs, I'll call that a PAS program, the FFA and PAS programs across the state, as well as though in neighboring states, are being targeted to promote the new program, and SMSU will have a physical presence at FFA and PAS events and activities. We are currently, as of today actually, interviewing faculty members who will have our first Ag Ed faculty member hired to start this summer. As resources become available, we will look to add additional faculty the following year. Our BS in agricultural education will make a real contribution to address the workforce challenges facing rural America. We can recruit and educate the next generation of ag leaders who will inspire our youth to pursue a rewarding and exciting future in a very dynamic agricultural economy. Southwest Minnesota has a well-deserved reputation as an agriculturally rich region that continues to grow and flourish. And we are confident that students from all over the state, especially from our service region, will welcome this chance to pursue ag education at SMSU.
You wrap up. Thank you.
I have two more sentences.
I think we got it.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much for your time and for the important work that you do, and I would strongly encourage you to support this. Thank you.
President Gores, it sounds like you've launched this program, but we're being asked for the money for the program, so that's a little bit confusing.
Sure.
And then, again, just like we had the questions of the last bill, where does MinSCU stand with this request? Because this is a program that you're offering, and yet Senator Dames is in a position to come and ask for state money that's outside of the general MinSCU request.
Maybe I can touch base on that, Madam Chair. I did talk to MinSCU. I believe you and I, in fact, Madam Chair, talked to MinSCU about this probably a year and a half or so ago. And this was, as they stated, a specific college program. Therefore, it would be the responsibility of the college. And it being a new program, funds are hard to come with. So that's why we're approaching, number one, the Education Committee for some funding. And that's why, as Dr. Gorse has alluded to, they've worked very hard in the community to bring some funds and with MEALSI and things like that. So this is just a piece of the total package. But mostly it's because, as I understand, the MNSCU budget is mostly just to maintain where they're at, and that this is a request for new money for a new program. But I'll let Dr. Gorse respond if there's something else.
Madam Chair, Senators, Senator Dames, he's correct in saying that actually the MNSCU request is to support current programs and to sustain the programs that are currently in place and meet inflationary needs. This is a new program. And as such, in a new initiative that that we're undertaking, as in a response really to the industry needs and the needs of the community in the region, we're actually projecting that the program with fixed costs alone will cost approximately $400,000 per year. That includes faculty, curriculum, technology, indirect costs, and this actually doesn't even include significant dollars for marketing, recruitment, and outreach.
So we know there is a real shortage of ag educators. We hear it everywhere. So we're not disputing the need. It's just wanting to understand how we got to this point. And then with regard to the request for the Crookston campus, have we gotten a commitment from the University of Minnesota that there, and perhaps our next testifier has some insight on that.
Well, I apologize, Madam President, but we did expect a testifier, but they were not able to make the day, so I really can't speak on behalf of the university or on the behalf of the Crookston campus. And Ms. Schwab was here to testify basically on sections 3 and 4, and if we're, you know, they're going to be excluded from what you're going to be dealing with. So unless there's some questions for Ms. Schwab on section 3 or 4, I think that would wrap up our testifiers in our testimony.
Very good. Well, Ms. Schwab, just want you to tell us your role, if you know, that you've been involved in, so we have a sense of what it is that you're working at.
Sure. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Carrie Schwab. I am the Community Program Assistant with the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, or MALC. Our board has been very, we have 17 board members, 6 of them are legislators, and we are a legislative council, so we receive funding through the U of M based budget as well as some special project funding with the Department of Agriculture. Our board is very supportive of the start of the agricultural education program at SMSU. We've also been meeting with Crookston to help support them in their process. Our basic mission is to support and expand agricultural education in Minnesota. So we are here to offer resources and our expertise to anyone who has an interest in teaching agriculture.
Thank you very much. And President Gorse, could you just comment in terms of your priority, given you're the president of the overall university, where does this fall within your priority list?
Madam Chair, Senators, where does it fall in the priorities? It's the one program that I arrived, as I said, summer of 13, and I heard time and time again that we need to meet the needs of ag educators in the state. We have the expertise. There's a need, so my priority is to put those two together and make it happen. It's actually the top new program that we are undertaking. It's a top priority.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. Well, Senator Dames, I think what we'd have to do is pass it out to finance. So we should delete, we should have a motion to delete those sections. So perhaps, Senator Miller, you would move to delete sections.
I need to understand what we're doing here so we don't lose the portions that we need to move to ag.
Right. So, Senator Sheeran, we would be deleting the sections that would be laid over for possible consideration into our bill. Then we would pass the remaining to full finance.
Okay. And how if we delete them, how do we move them into our bill?
We would delete them from this bill, and then we'd lay those on the table to be considered.
You have the sections?
Oh. 2, 5,
and... I didn't like that before.
I said no.
As long as it gets there.
2, 5, and 7.
Are you sure this is...
Be sure. It's the Board of the Trustees.
Madam Chair, it would appear that you would keep Section 2, Section 5, and Section 7.
We can't just send the whole bill?
You could send a division.
Why can't we send the whole bill?
Because then we wouldn't have it here.
Do that with my college and the schools bill. I had to break it up.
Yeah. Sure. Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question. I think it pertains to Section 7. And I know when Senator Bonoff and I, in the fall of 2013, traveled up into the northwest area of the state, and I've had additional communication with folks up in that area who are very concerned about losing their farm business management program. And I'm just wondering if Section 7 will help restore those positions that are being doing away with because of budget restrictions.
Within farm business management, there are 8 colleges. That means there's 8 presidents that make those decisions within MNSCU that does that. Obviously, as a Center of Excellence director, I would advocate for reinstatement of instructors. We have strong need in those areas. In fact, my Central Lakes folks are traveling that direction to help fill some of that void, which we cannot do on a sustainable basis. So this certainly would do that from a standpoint. It would close the gap a lot for MNSCU and make it financially viable for them to continue, at least from a farm business management perspective.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, just to follow up, I was a little bit concerned about the wording on line 3.2 where it talks about supplement and not supplanting.
It says
specifically
supplement.
There's other legislation pertaining to this, but within farm business management, one of the things that we have, it is across MNSCU, is called senior credit. And senior citizens are allowed to enroll in the program under current language, which is a substantial reduction in tuition. And there is other legislation coming forward that we would hope would alleviate that because it's not the appropriate place for it. We didn't want to see this money come in and then allow all that, all there's colleges perceiving this differently in terms of where they're using the senior credit, and we need that uniform across the system, and that's really why we didn't want to use this dollars in replacing of those dollars, if that helps clarify it any. But there is other legislation coming through, probably not this committee, to deal on the policy side within MNSCU to clarify that.
So Senator Miller moves to delete Section 2, 5, and 7. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted.
And Madam Chair, I just want the record to reflect that we're doing this with the intent to lay it over for possible inclusion.
Lay those sections
over. For possible inclusion in the higher ed bill.
Very good. And then would somebody entertain a motion to pass the bill to full finance?
I'll pass the bill to full finance.
Senator Sharon moves to, as amended, Senate file 1716 be recommended to pass and refer to full finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We appreciate your taking time to hear the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Bonoff, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 1981 appropriates $200,000 over the biennium to the Office of Higher Ed to provide scholarships for Minnesota residents attending state, public, and private schools. These scholarships are for attending and participating in credit-worthy academic internship programs administered by the Washington Center
that combine work experience in Washington, D.C. with participation in civic engagement and leadership activities. And I'm joined here today with David Anderson, Dr. David Anderson, who's the Senior Vice President of Government and Strategic Initiatives at the Washington Center. So first of all, thank you for flying in to Minneapolis to be with us today, or St. Paul. And I first met Dr. Anderson sitting at a lunch at NCSL. I can't remember which state we were in, but perhaps California. Yeah. Was that right? California. And I know that many of the states have participated in this program. Dr. Anderson shared with me what it was about, what the outcomes were. I know Senator Cohen has also been aware of this program and what's been happening with it. And so this bill is an attempt to introduce it to the Minnesota legislature, let people hear about it, and determine if it's something we'd like to participate in.
Dr. Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Anderson from the Washington Center for Internships, Senior Vice President, Government and Strategic Initiatives. Chairman Bonhoff, thank you very much for inviting the Washington Center to be here today. We did have someone else who was going to testify from Augsburg College, but at the last minute she could not make it. So my apologies. The Washington Center is a 501c3 nonprofit. Our mission is to provide transformational experiences for college students to foster leadership, civic engagement, and professional achievement. We offer college credit to almost all of our students, whether they come in the fall, the spring, or the summer semester. So essentially, students come from approximately 45 states and 30 countries, about 1,700 a year, to Washington for either a 10-week summer semester or the traditional 15-week fall semester or the 15-week spring semester. So 1,700 students a year. We were founded in 1975. We have over 50,000 alums. We receive funding from 14 states now, including Tennessee, Massachusetts, Florida, Pennsylvania, and others. And we also receive funding from the U.S. federal government and from private companies. Let me just briefly tell you what the students do when they come to Washington. Basically, there's three parts to the program. First, the students intern. It might be on Capitol Hill, at a federal agency, a nonprofit, or a company. In fact, we have seven different programs, ranging from law and criminal justice to media and communications to business and global trade. So basically, all majors. So the students intern 4 days a week, Monday to Thursday. Friday, we have essentially civic and professional achievement activities, including the Alan Simpson, Norm Mineta speaker series, which is approximately four times a semester. We will bring in an ambassador or a former senator or a leader from the nonprofit world, and 450 are in the summer. It's 650 students will listen to, for example, it could be Gary Doerr, ambassador from Canada to the United States. He'll talk for 20 minutes, and then for 30 or 40 minutes, they will get a chance to ask questions. So the students work basically in an internship. They have the civic engagement activities on Friday. They also take one of approximately 30 classes that we offer through our adjunct faculty. We have a full-time staff of 90 people. We then have an adjunct faculty of 50 people inside of Washington, Washington Insiders, people who teach at George Washington University or other places. So you basically have a three-part experience of work, civic activities on Friday, one academic class. The students also do a civic engagement project. Now, our request is for Minnesota to become what would actually be the 23rd state. I've been at the Washington Center for 10 years. I came from academia. I taught at six universities, including George Washington University. But I've been able to raise money from 20 states. We currently have 14. So, but this would be the 23rd state that would provide funding to bring students from whether it's Ohio or Pennsylvania or Puerto Rico. In this case, it would be from Minnesota. And we've asked for funding for students from public universities and private universities. So we're asking for $100,000 a year for each of 2 years. That's a $200,000 request. Our states tend to range in the $50,000 a year level all the way up to Florida, which is $715,000. But $100,000 divided into approximately $6,500 per student, that's for a partial scholarship. These are not full scholarships. The $6,500 essentially is the delta between what it costs a public university student, whether the student goes to St. Cloud University or Central Arkansas University. Arkansas is one of our funded states. The $6,500 or $7,000, depending on what the state decides, that makes up the difference between what it typically costs a student to go to a public university for a semester versus what it would cost to come to Washington through our program. For private university students, we typically have a smaller scholarship because, quite frankly, their tuition and their housing is more than ours. So private university students might get a scholarship of $2,000 or $3,000, and it can go a long way. And, in fact, we work with quite a few universities in Minnesota. We have a lot of attachments to Minnesota. In fact, Francis Humphrey Howard was on our board many years ago. We just gave an award to Senator Klobuchar. We work with Augsburg College. We work with St. Mary's, University of Minnesota. In fact, those two schools, St. Mary in particular, are really the only schools that are regularly sending us students. We had a student from the University of Minnesota at Duluth 7 years ago. We did have 17 students from St. Mary's in the last 5 years. So we've been getting 4 to 5 students a year from Minnesota. And we get 100 from Ohio, 110 from Florida. So we do get 4 to 5 students, but they basically come from the private universities because our costs are basically less. So for the private university students to come, it's not a heavy lift. We don't get students on a regular basis from Minnesota State at Mankato. In fact, we haven't had a student from Minnesota State at Mankato, I think, for 20 years. But when we start appropriations, as we did in Arkansas 8 years ago, in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Massachusetts, once we start getting funding, whether it's $100,000 or $2 or $350, then those students, the ones who really need a leg up, are able to start coming to our program. So we get 24 students a year from the state of Tennessee, all public university students. If you took the $150,000 away, this has been the last 8 years, we'd probably get 2 or 3 public university students. So our request is to really start this program. You have a massive public university system, a very distinguished public university system, both the University of Minnesota system, the Twin Cities, and the Minsky schools, and then you have many fine private schools. So the senator asked that we open this to both public and private universities, as we do in Pennsylvania, as we do in Ohio. And so quickly you ask, what is the value of this program? Well, there's really 2 ways to think about the value. And I'm a philosopher by training, so political philosophy and ethics. So there's really 2 kinds of value. The first is the value this provides to the student. So if you send 15 students a year, well, this program is going to have a big impact on 15 students. So it is going to, for many of them, change their lives if they've never, you know, even been to Washington, never thought of interning at Amnesty International or the Small Business Administration, and you know, just never had the opportunity. So it's going to have a big impact on the individual, him or herself. It's going to help him get jobs. It's going to get him involved in civic activities, all kinds of things. But secondly, and I've been having to make this argument for 10 years to legislators and governors, and I've also lobbied on Capitol Hill, when you invest, whether it's $100,000 a year or $500,000 a year, you are making an investment of your state into students who will bring all kinds of capital back to your communities, civic capital, political capital, business capital. Specific examples, these students will come back, you know, with 15 or 20 email addresses and Twitter addresses. They become connected. I mean, it's not 1977 or 78 now when I went to college. No, these students today, like, you know, our 19 and 20-year-old students, my stepson who's 23, you send them to a place like Washington or send them overseas. I mean, we are basically a sister or brother program to the overseas programs. They come back very connected, and they add to your state. So, yes, it would help the 15 students, but you would also be adding to all kinds of capital in the state of Minnesota. So I would open it up for questions at this time.
Dr. Anderson, thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any questions? Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question that's kind of a picky one in a way. Lines 1.13, 1.15, what if you don't get two-thirds from a public institution? In other words, can you move those scholarship opportunities? And
absolutely.
I'm just wondering when we put it in statute this way, I'm wondering if we're limiting ourselves in allowing those
Dr.
Anderson?
Yeah. Typically, the legislature, you know, puts a line item for the Washington Center, and usually the legislature does not put a lot of restrictions. And then we work with, in this case, it would be the Commission of Higher Education. And usually it takes a month or two to form some contract. And so that kind of issue, quite frankly, is not typically in the language, but it's really up to the committee and to the legislature whether to say that. Now, in the state of Illinois, for example, we've worked it out, and this is at the level of the Board of Higher Education, that it says if the proposed kind of distribution or allocation of scholarships does not work as planned, then the, you know, Washington Center can, you know, and the state can decide to apportion, you know, more money per student. So likewise here, you could just have a clause that says if two-thirds of the scholarships are not able to be given out, you know, at the level of $6,500, that might come up at the commission level, then it's open to the commission to work with the Washington Center. So we are certainly open to you putting in language that would provide that flexibility.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. And the language does say the commissioner may reallocate money among institutions if an institution does not expend its allocation. So I think we have that issue taken care of in there. Any other questions, members? Senator Sharon.
I just want to confirm what I think I heard you say,
Dr. Anderson.
Dr. Anderson. That you have had students come from St. Mary's.
Yes.
And 20 years ago from someplace and never from Minnesota State Mankato. And that's because they knew about it somehow, and they use their own resources, correct? So it's maybe you have some scholarship money too.
We have other scholarship money. So there are federal scholarships, there's private sector, but the reality is that those scholarships, the federal ones especially, are extremely competitive. So students from St. Cloud University, for example, or University of Minnesota Duluth, they can apply for those scholarships. But, you know, there might be 400 applications for 100 slots. But in Arkansas, where we get $100,000, we then work hard to give out the $100,000 at the six or seven schools that know about it. So if you appropriate money, I mean, there's going to be enough money for your students. We do have disability scholarships. I mean, so a student can apply, but the odds of a student, you know, getting one of those very competitive scholarships is the odds are not high. But if you appropriated $100,000, the odds for that student at St. Cloud would be reasonably high. Obviously, if you appropriate $200,000, you know, a year, two years from now, then you're going to have more available scholarships.
Senator Sharon?
Yeah, and so I don't read this in the language, so I just want to understand that it doesn't say that in the language that you will recruit these students and distribute the money. Is that what the plan is? This looks like it's all within the Office of Higher Education, that the money goes to them for the purpose of providing scholarships.
The way we
Dr.
work,
Dr. Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The way we work with the other funded states is the money goes to like a commission or a Department of Higher Education. We, our staff of 90, send out approximately half of the staff twice a year to 200 different colleges, and we physically show up in the funded states especially and recruit. So we will send people to, you know, many of the universities if funding is provided. And then we use social media and all kinds of other forms of communication. The students basically apply through their university through to us, and then we have liaisons. We have hundreds of liaisons around the country, including at some of your schools where we work with regularly, like St. Mary's. And the liaison is usually the like career services director. So the liaison is the face to the Washington Center, and the liaison basically tells the student what needs to be done. And they essentially are the first hurdle in terms of getting into the program. If we have a limited amount of money, then what happens is we will tell certain schools, based on whatever the commission decides, how many scholarships have been allocated. So St. Cloud might get two scholarships. Well, so the liaison knows that, that he or she has two scholarships to give out. Does that answer the question?
Senator Sharon.
Yes, it does. And then I'm reading further, Senator Bonoff. It looks like your plan within the language is that, I mean, we're talking about who, you know, because students haven't been there, it may have been that they applied for these scholarships from Minnesota and didn't make the cut for some reason, so there's criteria or something that impacts who gets the scholarships or not. And here, who gets the scholarships, according to the language, is that the institution sets up the application process and the terms. Is that how each institution would
basically
set
the schools
their priorities?
Decide? Once we have to accept the application. I mean, we have to, you know, the students have to have certain grade point average, you have to have two letters. I mean, you know, they have to get accepted by us. But if there's a decision being made about which of there's four students at St. Cloud who want to come and there's only two scholarships, we pretty much leave it up to St. Cloud. So that's the liaison, or the, you know, they can decide, and frequently they use a first come first serve basis.
Sorry.
But
may I? Yeah, I just I'm sorry to sir. Interrupt you. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying, because I thought I heard you now say that whether we have scholarships funded by the state or not, you have some also. That whoever the student is has to meet your criteria and be accepted in this program. And then the question is whether or not they would be eligible for the scholarship, which might be another completely different set of criteria.
No. There's just one application, like applying to college. So this is a college semester, basically. So the students have to be admitted. You know, our staff have to admit them. And the liaison actually works with the student to say, look, you know, you didn't even write your second essay, so I'm not ready to send your application on. Once the liaison sends us the application, in almost all cases, will we say the student is accepted. Now, if there's $100,000 in the state, right, for 15 students, and let's just say 30 students want to come, well, then the schools basically have to say, well, the state has only provided two scholarships for us here. So basically the schools then decide who they will give the scholarship to. Does that answer the question?
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, and we've actually structured it so the Commissioner of Higher Education is going to administer this program and be the ultimate decider working with the institutions. And Marin is here nodding, and they've agreed if the committee chose to participate in this. And I would consider it a pilot, and I would, in keeping with other provisions, request council to add reporting language so we could hear how many students participated, which schools, what was their experience. But I would entrust that responsibility for setting up the process to the Commissioner of Higher Education, because it does say that commissioner shall create a process to allocate the appropriation.
Senator Sharon.
Well, I would be remiss to not say that in that process, not in the process at Washington, but that I'd like to be able to review what the decision-making process would be, because we want these to be distributed reasonably around the state to the various institutions, both rural the university, yeah. the Minsky system, and not just the University of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon agreed, and I think that was why we also put the two-thirds public. But to your point, we really did mean it to be even broader, and so we could certainly add language. Thank you.
Any other questions, members? I just want the record to reflect that St. Mary's University was mentioned several times, and that fine institution is located in Winona, one of their campuses.
We did have a student from Winona State within the last 5 years also, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Anderson's learning. He's learning. All right, members. We will lay Senate File 1981 over for possible inclusion in the higher ed omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
All right, I think that's it, isn't it?
Senator Claussen.
Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 959, a proposal to provide an authentic year-long student teaching experience for Minnesota-educated teacher candidates. And, Madam Chair, I would like to begin by offering the A4 amendment.
So Senator Claussen offers the A4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Aye. It's getting late.
Madam Chair, it was not very enthusiastically approved, but I appreciate my colleague, Senator Claussen.
Hearing none, the motion is adopted.
It's late in the day.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a little bit about the A4 amendment. First, it really removes Section 1, which is a large portion of the original proposal. Section 1 defines the teacher licensing requirements for the state of Minnesota and really is not pertinent to the year-long student teaching proposal that we're going to be discussing in Senate File 959. The second piece of the amendment, it corrects language and effective date errors in the body of the bill. So that's really the two main provisions.
Thank you.
Well, student teaching is one of the core requirements and culminating experience of the teacher preparation process. And currently, Minnesota teacher preparation institutions generally require a 16-week student teaching experience. Senate File 959 provides for an optional academic year-long experience in conjunction with pedagogy and methods courses included within the year-long student teaching framework. And I want to be clear that this proposal will not add an additional year to a student's coursework, and Ms. Chris can talk a little bit more about that. A year-long student teaching experience allows a teacher candidate the opportunity to be a true faculty member within the school professional teaching community. A longer teaching experience allows the student to gain greater knowledge of school policies and procedures, more time for reflective practice and experience, more time to be mentored, and more time to be truly integrated into the responsibilities of a teacher. All of these experiences result in a more realistic transition to the first year of having a classroom of their own. And this is not a revolutionary idea. Several European countries have a similar model, while Arizona, Indiana, and Iowa have pilots using year-long student teaching model as well. This proposed pilot program will foster the development of better prepared teachers for Minnesota schools and classrooms. Senate File 959 is requesting $350,000 to award up to two pilot grant projects with a Board of Teaching approved teacher preparation program. And with us today is Cindy Crist, legislative and policy liaison representing the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education.
Ms. Crist.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, some of you have heard me talk about this previously in the E-12 committee. I'll just reiterate what Senator Claussen said about the critical nature of student teaching. I had not coordinating with him some of exactly the same language about the culminating experience of student teaching, although it's important for you to know that that's not the only clinical experience that our students have. They start them much earlier, and they have a variety of experiences to complete because it's so important to spend that time in the classroom and to see put into practice and then themselves put into practice what they've learned in the classroom. There are a number of challenges involved with year-long student teaching, which is a major part of why we so appreciate approaching this as a funded pilot project. There are costs to the institution. We're not just talking about just somehow expanding the length of student teaching and then that's it. You heard Senator Claussen's description of some of the kinds of outcomes he envisions, and I think then you can extrapolate from those some of the things that would have to be put in place in order to make those happen. The mentoring and the understanding of how the school works, being part of the school community, and so on. So there'd be cost to our institutions of doing that, cost to the schools in which the students are placed for making that possible, and cost to the students, potentially more foregone income while they're student teaching, cost of either a longer period of traveling to and fro or finding housing in that area. So the pilot will help us sort of sort through many of those issues and just see how well it works. Not whether or not it's a good idea, because I think everybody agrees it's a good idea, but the devil is always in the details and the details of the implementation. I do want to respectfully suggest one other possible change, which I thought from talking to staff was included in the amendment, and maybe we were talking past each other a little bit, and that is the date for submission of the report from the Board of Trustees of MNSCU on the pilot. Our student teacher placements for fall of 2015 are already all in place. So we would not be able to place any students in any kind of a new program or have that program in place until sometime after the fall semester. And so reporting back by March 1 of next year on the experience of the student teachers really would not be possible. And so in the House, in recognition of that, they changed that date to March 1st, 2017. And I had thought that was included from talking to staff. I had thought that was included in the amendment. And she probably thought I was talking about the change, the implementation change to 2015. So I'd just like to ask if that could be considered.
Madam Chair, I would like, Ms. Chris makes a good point. Sorry, we overlooked that. But we would like to then propose an oral amendment.
So Senator Claussen moves on line 4.27, 2016 be stricken and 2017 be put in its place. Thank all those in sure. favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted.
Thank you.
Now, I just had one more point that I wanted to raise, and this is something perhaps more for discussion throughout the pilot, but when the language of the bill talks about school year-long student teaching, and we're not quite sure if that means the equivalent of a full year or if it means if the school year is consistent with a school district year, so starting in September and ending in May. And obviously that would have some implications, too, for the implementation of the pilot. But I think that's a detail that we can work out as we go forward. But as we're looking, I think maybe the most important thing for you to know is that we're taking this seriously enough that we've looked at all of this language. We continue to think about what does this mean for implementation and for our practices. And so I would just conclude again by saying we think it's a wonderful idea. The more our students can be embedded into classrooms, putting into practice what they've learned, the better. It's just a question of how do we do it, how do we do it effectively, and how do we do it in a way that we can afford it, our school district partners can afford it, and our students can afford it.
Thank you. And four of us around this table are on E-12, so we've actually heard this bill, so we're very well-versed. Thank you. Senator Claussen, was in terms of the fiscal impact, was there any thought of sharing it between E-12?
Madam Chair, there was not.
Okay, so we can discuss that, but thanks very much. Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just wondering, as far as how it would work, since it'd be a whole year program, would it be replacing then classes that normally would have been taken under the old program? This is an option that would replace some of those classes then and give equal credit, so you don't have to be going any longer. It would be going the same amount of time. It's just, okay.
Chris?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Eakin, and that's one of the things the pilot project needs to work out. I think it's clear from the language that the expectation is that these individuals aren't going to just be student teaching full-time 5 days a week through the school year, but they're also going to have embedded learning opportunities, and particularly if we're going to make sure that this doesn't add a year to the program. So our institutions are going to have to work to figure out how that would work. Would classes and workshops be offered on site with students maybe clustered in a small number of districts so that they can student teach, let's say, Monday through Thursday, and then on Friday they take these courses and workshops? So it's exactly the kind of question we need to ask, because this is not just, as I said, not as simple as just adding on some additional time for student teaching, but to make it fit the program, the institutions are really going to have to look at how they would change their offerings. I think you've probably, at least those of you on E12, have probably had occasion to look at the, I think it's 13 pages of the rules for teacher licensure, the standards for effective practice. That's actually one set of them. They're extremely detailed, and our institutions have to work very hard to determine how to place all of those standards in courses, and for Minsky institutions, on top of that, to do it within the 120-credit limit. So it's a daunting task. It takes a lot of work to figure it out, and it's going to take a lot of work to figure this out, too.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Senator Klassen.
And, Madam Chair, just one other comment along that line, Senator Eaton. There are three states that have currently have done pilot studies, and we'd be looking towards their experiences as well and their models. So we won't be the first.
Very good. So any other questions? Anyone else want to comment on the bill? Well, Senator Klassen will lay Senate File 1624 as amended. Oh, I'm sorry, 959 as amended to be considered in the omnibus bill. Thanks very much. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Last but not least, Senate File 1624. I do have an author's amendment that I think is going
we
around.
We do the A1.
I'd like to move that.
Senator Franzen moves the A1. It's being handed out. I'll wait till it's handed out to everyone. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is another tool in the toolbox, if you will, to deal with some of the cost of higher education in terms of saving for that and dealing with the 529 plans. There are two main pieces of this bill. The first part is a matching grant program that models almost exactly to what was in law back in 2001 through 2010 in this state. It was eliminated in 2011. And the second part is a new tax deduction. The matching grant provides a consistent benefit to everyone under the income limit of $80,000, and the deduction reduces taxable income, so the actual savings vary for everyone. The other unique factor of this bill is that it tries to incentivize businesses to invest some money into future workforces. Subdivision 8 is of the bill. Businesses or just private individuals can make contributions to savings account of their choice or can contribute to set amounts to help fund the overall matching grant program. The matching grant program would only be applied to Minnesota College Savings Plan accounts, and the deduction would be available for any contributions made to 529 plans, regardless of whether it's Minnesota College Savings Plans or not. I can quickly outline the main components of the bill for members. Section 1, the matching grant, like I mentioned, has a maximum of $400 of state-funded match deposited once a year to eligible Minnesota College Savings Plan accounts for those earning less than $80,000 a year. The value of the matching grant is based on the beneficiary's family income or the beneficiary's income if he or she is age of 25 or older. Exceptions to the, and this is basically what was in existence back in the 2001 and 2010 through 2010 program. What's new is exceptions to the $400 max. So if the amount of the matching grant exceeds the amount of the state appropriation to this program for the year, the commissioner can proportionately reduce each grant to the total equals that are available for the appropriation. So for instance, in a tight budget year, contributors may not get the full $400 a match if we choose not to fully fund the program. So there's some flexibility in this bill. And then also new that wasn't part of the previous program at our state is outside grants, and that's the provision in the bill that allows for the Office of Higher Education to solicit and accept outside contributions to help fund this program. So they can come from private corporations, other businesses, foundations, employers, or other individuals, and it can actually go with a specific beneficiary. So it's got an innovative way of also funding and having other stakeholders part of the solution for the increasing costs of and savings for higher ed. Also, contributors can designate certain fields of study, so it's pretty flexible and, again, innovative. And the last section, the tax deduction, the taxpayers can subtract from the federal income tax total contributions made during the year to a 529 college savings plan account not to exceed $10,000 for married couples filing jointly, or $5,000 for all filers. And this is only usable for those who itemize deductions. So, Madam Chair, members, that is a very high overview of the bill. I stand for questions, but I try to keep it as simple as I could in the explanation.
Thank you. And Senator Franzen, the fiscal note is not as high as I told you. It's $7 million. So just wanted to make sure you knew that. And
thank you.
Saw that. Yes.
I did see that.
Good. So questions for Senator Franzen? I think people are digesting.
Well, Madam Chair, why they do that, I wanted to mention that the amendment came. I had a meeting with Revenue yesterday, and they advised to be removed from the bill so we would be able to manage it a lot more efficiently than having them be kind of troubleshooting with some of the income, family income verification requirements. We thought that that would be Office of Higher Ed has already methods to establishing that, so we didn't need to insert the Department of Revenue if it wasn't feasible or if it made it clunky or more expensive to administer.
Very good. Any questions? I think we're good.
Great. Thank you. Well, I urge everybody's support in the members and Madam Chair. It also is similar to some of the Senator Claussen had a similar bill, I believe, last year, so it has some of that components to this
and
bill.
And Senator Claussen's bill is moving this year as well, so it's right now in taxes. Sick. Yeah.
So I appreciate your support and including it as potential, possibly including in the omnibus
so
bill.
We'll lay it over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much,
Thank
Senator
you.
Franzen. So with that, I just wanted to review briefly what's happening next week. So next Tuesday, we'll begin the hearing by hearing from some internationally leading medical researchers at the University of Minnesota. And we're doing that because within our bill, as you know, the governor's put in a strong request for an investment in the University of Minnesota Med School. We are considering that as well. And so Senator Cohen, who spearheaded that effort, requested that we have a chance as a committee to hear the kind of research that is happening. So we'll hear from a few doctors, and then we will roll out the omnibus bill. At that time, we'll take discussion, testimony, welcome amendments. If we are in a position to vote on the final bill, we will. If we need to come back the next day, we will do that. And prior to Tuesday, we'll have a chance to talk to learn what's in the bill, and you'll have a chance to give personal input. So any questions about that process or schedule? So with that, the committee is adjourned. Thanks very much.
Are you going to be here tomorrow? How expensive was that?